Magandang hapon, binibini at ginoo. And for those not conversant with the Filipino language, that means good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Hidden Apron Radio. My name is Paolo Espanola, and this is a show where we talk to the most interesting diners and cooks this side of the galaxy to find ways for you to cook better, eat deliciously, and in general, just live well. You'll find everything here from kitchen hacks, side hustle advice, philosophical arguments, fun stories, and the occasional semi-food-related rant. Now, for this first episode, I got a chance to talk with someone who I feel really epitomizes what Hidden Apron means. And it's someone who's forged her own path despite the various challenges that she's faced, including no formal culinary training. She has no HQ to call home in the traditional sense, and is making quite a name for herself in the food and creative space. She's also a good friend of mine since we first met a few years ago at a pop-up dinner that she held in Brooklyn. And if you've been following the Filipino food scene lately, or any of the food scenes, because she's been all over the United States, you'll have come across the name Yana Gilbuena, who really came into prominence for tackling the insane, and that's quite the understatement, insane challenge of cooking a Filipino pop-up dinner in each of the 50 states within the space of a year through what she called the Salo series. Now, Salo in our language means both to catch and to gather. The project started in March last year. She basically gave up her apartment lease in Brooklyn, whittled her belongings down to a backpack and a trusty set of knives, and she finally completed this whirlwind tour earlier this year and is now setting her sights for South America. And it sounds completely bizarre and probably the plot of a very good movie, but it's all true. She has quite the interesting background, having moved between the Philippines, LA, NYC, of course, all over the United States. She's dabbled in pre-med, architecture, design. She's been featured in CNN, Pepper PH, Balitang America, TFC, hosts of local publications and blogs. Needless to say, she's a total badass and has one of the thickest backbones there is. So in this show, we'll cover everything from the moment of truth of transitioning from her 9-to-5 to the life of pop-up dinners, the role of creativity in cooking, whether you need it or not, the absolute minimum equipment and skills you need to cook for yourself, and you'd be surprised to know that a knife is actually not one of them, and lessons she's learned from letting go and being open to what the world has to offer. So without further ado, Yana Gilbuena. Yana, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Pao. Thank you for having me.
I feel like it's like a lot of firsts between me and you, because you're the first person who let me help on a pop-up dinner. Also, the first out-of-state pop-up I helped at. Now you're my first podcast. And I think, I'm not your first Skype contact, right?
No.
I was going to say, I was like, man, she doesn't even have Skype.
I think I did it before in LA, and I just was like, oh, this doesn't really serve me that much. So I think I kind of deleted that and did not think about installing it again until now.
Well, fun fact for the people listening, I now know what Yana's real name is.
Oh, shit. <It's>
Maria Diana, because you still exist in the Skype world. Yes. So Salo, I mean, I think a lot of the people who will be listening, and especially the news, you've been covered by a lot of prestigious outlets, kind of already know the story behind the 50-state tour. But now that that's over, what do you tell people when they ask you, like, what do you do? Because you're no longer, oh, it's just the Filipino girl who traveled 50 states cooking Filipino pop-up dinners. Like, what do you tell people now when they meet you and say, like, oh, Yana, what do you do?
I pretty much tell them that I'm like a traveling chef, and basically, their next question is, cool, so where are you based? And I'm just like, nowhere. I just travel and cook.
So, and so now, in the new year, you're headed to South America, right?
Yes.
Is there a reason why South America, out of all the countries in the world or continents to have traveled to, why South America?
Well, I think what made me choose it was because we're coming into winter, mm-hmm. and I want to go south where it's kind of like the reverse of the of the weather. So I'm just like, it doesn't make sense for me to go to Europe right now because I don't want to freeze my ass off, but you know,
yeah.
And at the same time, like I think I want to say that I did the Americas in general, both North and South, because I technically did like 50 states and then Canada. And I just found out that Mexico is actually part of North America. Mm-hmm. So I'm not totally done until I end the tour for Central and South America in Mexico.
Oh, man. And I mean, that's something that, I mean, I think people thought you were crazy enough to do 50 states, right? And now it's like an entirely new region. And do you feel like it's a place that's entirely foreign to you, that, you know, the definition of Salo and the dinner series has changed because of that? Or is it going to change? Or do you feel like it's just an extension of what it always has been?
Well, I think I created Salo before because I wanted an experience that would get people together. So technically Salo is not just about food. It's also about like building a community with it. So like when I first started my first ever pop-up, like community was involved because like I got the location because I did a trade. So it's through this organization called R Goods. So I found a guy who said he needed furniture building skills, and he has a loft in exchange to offer. So I was like, this is so perfect. And at that time, Third Ward was still, you know, functioning. So Third Ward was like this creative hub where people can build stuff. Like if you want to learn how to sew, if you want to learn how to paint, if you want to learn woodworking, there's photography. Anything creative that you would want to explore outside of your own, I would say, like, profession. So, and I was a member of it, and it just worked out perfectly that I could help that guy build his table, and he offered me the loft space. So that on its own was, like, the community there. And also being able to, like, deliver an experience to people that is not something that they can get if they dine in a restaurant. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was kind of like, I want to break conventions of what dining is, or like the concept of what dining is. Mm-hmm. So if you take yourself out of a restaurant, is it still considered dining? If there's no utensils, is it still considered dining? If there are no plates, you know, and now you're breaking bread with a bunch of strangers, how often do you get to do that in a normal restaurant setting?
Right. And I think I read somewhere you did one in an alley, right?
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, during this very, it almost seems like a very reductionist approach of like, let's keep taking familiar elements away and still seeing if it's called dining. So in that case, what do you define dining as then?
I think dining for me is as simple as sharing a meal, you know? So it could be, you know, you could be dining alone. You're sharing a meal with yourself, or you could be dining with someone, or you could be dining with your community. Yeah. And I think, you know, that's the whole purpose of why we cook. We want to share food. We want to not just make food for ourselves. You know, we want to share what we created.
Yeah. I like how you said you could share the meal with yourself, because I was about to go like, man, I eat out alone a lot. Why not? I'm such a loser. But hold up, going back to something you just said, because it caught my ear and I wasn't sure if I heard it right. The guy who initially helped you do the trade for the first pop-up, you said he needed furniture building skills?
Yes.
So you're saying the first trade wasn't even like, hi, I'm a chef. No. You actually got brought into build furniture?
Well, because my background is interior and design and architecture, aside from being pre-med, my second background. But, oh, man. So I was a furniture designer back in LA, and, you know, I learned how to build furniture, and I know very well how to do it. And so the opportunity came up and I was like, hey, I want to test this concept out just to see like if the reception is great. If not, then this is a great dinner party, you know?
Yeah.
And it just so happened that, you know, all my friends pitched in. Like my friend was a graphic designer, helped me create my logo, the menu. My friend who has lights brought lights, you know. My other friend was like, I will help you serve, you know, and all that stuff. And it was just like the whole energy of like people wanting to come together because they share your vision is so energizing.
It's
just like it's so electric. Like at the end of the night, I had people, you know, come up to me and they're like, so are you going to do it again? And I'm just like, hold on.
I just finished one.
I know. And I'm like, let's talk about that. Like after I've done all these dishes.
Yeah. No, I can definitely relate to that. I remember when we did our first pop-up you helped on that one. And there were people who were like, oh, I'll do the PR for you. Oh, let me just design the graphic. I'm like, who? I was supposed to be feeding you guys. I'm like, what is, you know, I think that sense of community is definitely something that I really admired during your solos. But how did you, I'm trying to still make the connection between how does one go from designing furniture to pop-up dinners, right? Like how did you transition from it being just a hobby or something you did for yourself? Like, oh, I just cooked for myself, to I'm going to actually do a pop-up dinner. Like, what was the thought process behind that?
I think the thought process behind that was, at that time, I was so inspired. I was living in Greenpoint, and I was really, knee-deep in this community that was fostering, like, creativeness. Mm-hmm. I had friends all around me that had regular jobs that also had their side hustle and their, like, side passion and are making it work.
Right.
And I think that was one of the reasons why I moved from LA to New York, was because I wanted to find something that I was passionate about. And at that time I was working still in the furniture world, and all my friends were doing like pop-up dinners. And at that time I was also like a writer for like a local blog called the Green Pointers. Mm-hmm. And I immediately just had an affinity towards like food events. So I think my first ever pop-up dinner that I attended, like I was sent as a reporter to like cover that pop-up dinner and take photos and all that stuff. And I'm just like, when I got there, I was just like, this is so cool. Like, it was on a rooftop in Greenpoint. Like, it was someone's house. Like, we had to go through a window to get to the rooftop. You know what I mean? And, like, totally illegal. And then, you know, they had a violinist. And then, you know, the table setting was just perfect. Like, the sun was setting. There were flowers, you know. And then they all came out, introduced themselves, and, you know, put out the first course, second course, third course. And I just kept thinking to myself, like, how awesome is this gathering that only a few people can talk about or can relate to? And at that time, I was like, you know, the wheels were spinning, and I was like, I want to know more of, like, how I can make something like this happen, you know? And I don't have any background at all in culinary whatsoever. Like, the closest thing I could ever have put on my resume was like, I worked as a barista for a Coffee Bean, you know what I mean? Like, I know how to make a latte with art.
we both have the same story, because the only thing like culinary speaking on my resume is I was a barista for a Starbucks, so I felt like you're already 10 steps ahead of me. So it's not like you were like, I mean, you hear of other people doing this, right, who are like, oh, I'm so used to cooking for like 50 of my family members, so this is just a natural jump for me. Like, so it wasn't the case that you were already cooking for large groups of friends, family before that?
No, not really. I mean, you know, my friends always had gatherings, and I would always volunteer to cook because I didn't like the aspect of just being out there and not doing something. Maybe it's the Filipino mom in me, you know, who just wants to be like, hey, let me facilitate the cooking, make sure everyone's fed, you know? But I think I just gravitated towards the kitchen because it's a sense of comfort for me. Like,
right.
Preparing food was something so natural that I was like, yeah, I'll do it, you know? But with that said, like, the whole thing started was when I think I moved from Greenpoint to Red Hook, and it was like the dead of winter, and I was like, I'm so craving for arroz caldo right now. Like, it's so cold, and arroz caldo is like the only thing that I think would make my day right now, you know? And I was thinking to myself, I'm like, I can't even order it through Seamless. I can't even walk to the nearest, you know, like, Filipino spot. And even if there is a Filipino spot near me, I don't think they'd be serving arroz caldo right now. You know what I mean? Right. Like, and it made me think, like, what other dishes are there that exist from my childhood, from the island that I grew up in, that people don't even know about, you know? And it just made me like think like of all the Filipino restaurants that I've been to, and I'm like, for example, bok choy. No one serves bok choy, and I'm like, this is so sad. Bok choy is like Filipino ramen.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know. And I'm just like, you can't get bok choy anywhere. Like, even in New York, where will you order bok choy? Seriously.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm like, and it made me think, like, this is New York. This is supposed to be the mecca of, like, diversity. This is supposed to be the melting pot. And with that said, I'm like, why is our food so underrepresented? And it just made me think, like, I want to do a pop-up dinner that features, you know, regional Filipino food.
Right.
And, you know, not knowing what I was getting myself into, I was like, this sounds like a great idea. Let's do it. And I want to do it here. I want to have this. And I obviously chose Kamayan because it was something that, you know, resonated with me. Right. I enjoy eating with my hands. Like, I love the tactile experience of it. And how do you say it? Like, I love feeding all of the senses, not just like...
It's not just about the taste.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, it's about, you know, feeding your visual, your olfactory, your touch. And it's like, it's an experience that I feel is not often replicated or given, you know, in any restaurant setting. And I wanted people to experience that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm you know, on a side note, I'm glad you brought up the whole underrepresentation of Filipino food. I think that's a huge can of worms. So I'm going to save that for later. Because you know we could go on forever for that one. But I wanted to focus on that creative aspect, right? You mentioned having, you know, using these pop-ups and really considering all senses. I think you're right. I know I've been to some places where the food looks absolutely gorgeous, and then you taste it and you're like, what the hell? You know, you're like, no, why? It's like, it doesn't do it justice. Do you feel like your background in the creative space, whether it's, you know, being a part-time writer or your background in furniture, do you feel like some of that has influenced your philosophy around food?
I think, I've always been very creative since I was a kid, I mm-hmm. think. Like, I was really into the visual arts mm-hmm. and also music. And that I think that's why I keep gravitating towards these creative outlets, you know, the older I get. And I do think that my background or my eye for design, for example, definitely influences, like, how I want my dinners to be perceived, you right. know, like, I want it to be experiential. You know, you go in there, the atmosphere is awesome. You have either a musician playing or, like, it's in a very different space that is not normally used for dining, and everyone's just like, wow, this is awesome. I can't believe this is happening. And then the food comes, and then obviously that's another talking point. And I just want them to kind of perceive the dinner as like layers, you right. know what I mean? And in that sense, some of them are being fulfilled, obviously, through the food, and some of it through their interactions with people.
Yeah, you're really connecting yeah. with the diner on what's relevant to them.
Yes.
Like, it's not always, I mean, some diners are going to come just because of the food. Some are coming for I don't know, maybe it's the entertainment. So I think that's really cool that you could relate to a lot of different types of diners, right? Yes. But what would you say then to, you know, and I've heard this a couple of times when I ask some people, you know, they see an Instagram photo of something either I've created or one of us or like friends of ours, right, who are in the uh-huh. food space, and they're like, yeah, but I'm just not creative, you know, I mean, I'm just not the creative type. Like, what, like, how do you respond to someone who doesn't believe they're creative enough to cook food? Do you think it's a prerequisite, or, you know?
No, I think it's, creativity is not a prerequisite to cooking, because I feel like cooking is a necessity. Mm-hmm. Because it's a survival skill. Like, if you don't know how to cook your food, I'm like, I don't know, McDonald's can't probably feed you all your life. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But in the sense of, like, creating, as what they say, like, culinary masterpieces or whatever it is, you know, I feel like you need to have a sense of how flavor works. You know, like, mm-hmm. how a painter knows what colors go together. You know what I mean?
Right.
In a sense that how a pianist knows that these notes and these chords go versus, you know, this other thing. And I feel like with cooking, it's kind of like the same thing. Like, you know, it's good food. You don't necessarily know why it is, but it is. And it's right. very instinctual. And I feel like I want people to not be so daunted at the fact that, oh, but I read this cookbook, it seems so intricate, you know what I mean? And it's like, no, just explore the kitchen. Like, I tell people all the time, like, taste the ingredient before it's been cooked, you know, so you kind of get a sense of, like, how it tastes. And then, you know, do experiment with it, like blanch it, roast it, bake it, fry it, see how it, you know, reacts to these processes that you've subjected it to.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And the worst thing that could happen is it doesn't taste good. It's like, it's not gonna kill you.
Exactly. And now you know that, yeah. Oh, I should not have roasted that thing. Like, you know, I should not have roasted jicama, for example. It's not fun. Yeah.
I remember one time I tried to I tried to char some bell peppers by sticking two metal chopsticks into it and putting it over my stove. Mm-hmm. Not knowing that the metal chopsticks conduct heat. So,
oh, Jesus Christ.
Well, now I know, right? but so I wanted to get your take on this, because I feel like you, in a way, the whole survival aspect, you've kind of had to do that, right? You've cooked in kitchens that have far less than the average kitchen.
Yes.
And I feel part of the problem we have is, obviously, media shows us, like, Martha Stewart's kitchen, right? And she has, like, everything's ready to go. She has 20 different plates. She has a whole, you know, huge oven. And not everyone has that. And so if you had to take the very absolute minimum approach to cooking, you know, to tell someone this is the absolute minimum you need and you could cook a meal, what would the minimum be in terms of equipment?
Fire and a pot.
Not even a knife.
Well, you can cut things with other things. Ah, you know what I mean?
Right, right, yeah.
Yeah, but if you don't have fire, actually, I take it back. You need fire and water. You know what
water,
I mean?
Water, that's like, interesting.
Yeah, because you can do all sorts of things with these two elements.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like come high water, whatever, like, if you really need to cut something, you'll probably use your fingers or you'll just mash it, whatever it is.
Oh,
you know
wow.
what I mean?
Yeah, I didn't even consider that, because, you know, I was thinking of of what the absolute, you know, I was going through my head, how would I would answer this question? For me, I was like, knife at the very minimum. And I'm like, yeah, you could just smash it. Like, I wonder what people use before the knife. So it's really cool to see. What, so when you've done your pop-up, what was a pop-up that you've done that you had the absolute minimal setup ever? And the one that ended successfully, by the way.
I think, oh, that's really hard. I think I have to say it was actually not in the 50 states. It was actually when I went back to Bitoon, where ARC was,
Oh,
and
yeah.
I had to cook for I had to cook three courses for 372 children.
Oh God. They are the most discerning diners, by the way. They're like the most unforgiving.
Oh yeah. And I had to cook three courses. On top of that, it was in a dirty kitchen, and it was like, you know, the dapog, as we call it. Dapog is like, you know, it's like cement, and then you add, it's like a crevice that's surrounded by cement or stone, and then you add burning wood to it. And then there's a grill on top of it, and then you can either have like a stove sit on top of the grill, or you can cook right on the grill. But I have to say, like, that was the most minimal that I've ever cooked, and I pulled it through.
Just
Like
very
I'm
it's very
doing.
you've seen Chef's Table, right? Have you seen the one with Francis Mallmann?
Yeah,
Yeah,
he's
that
like
sounded so like you.
Like he's like my, I don't know, soulmate
Yeah.
in life, probably, or
Wait,
probably him. We're in just in parallel universes.
so for the people who don't know, what is Bitoon and what is Arc?
ARC is Advancement for Rural Kids. And what they do is they rebuild classrooms and schools that have been affected by Typhoon Haiyan, and Bitoon, which means star in our native dialect, Hiligaynon, is a school in Capiz, and they were affected by Typhoon Haiyan, and they were one of the beneficiaries of ARC, and I was raising money for ARC in order to benefit them.
And so you went to the school to cook for the kids.
I went to the school primarily to meet the kids that I was going to, you know, donate money to and stuff. And it just so happened that they were like, "Oh, you cook." And Ayesha, the founder, was like, "I think it would be great if you can just give them a salo too." And I was like, "Okay." I didn't bring anything. This was the time that I did not bring my knives because I was on vacation
Yeah.
in Iloilo, and I was just like, I'm just gonna go visit la 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 la. And then, like, she was like, "Oh yeah, I think you should do a salo with the kids." I was like, "Yeah, sounds awesome."
This is typical. So I'm interviewing her actually in the new year for this for the podcast too, and it sounds very typical. Yeah, she was like, "Here's a hole in the wall where you could put some grills on. Have at it."
And then they showed me the kitchen, and I was like, "Oh my God. This is it. This just reminds you of my childhood." Because we had one in our backyard, like in the back of the house, and that's where we would like do sinugba, which pretty much is like grilling on charcoal.
Right. So you've cooked, if that was the absolute minimum, and I know you've also cooked in some pretty nice kitchens, right? I think the one I saw in Chicago was a pretty nice setup because the guy had like a grill and a flat top and stoves and an oven. The one in the, I think it was like an auto shop or something like that. Yeah, you remember that one? So, I
Yes,
mean, if
that
you've cooked from a spectrum of kitchens with a spectrum of equipment, do you feel like the pop-up dining, you know, creating these pop-up dinners has gotten easier for you? Like, what about pop-up dinners has gotten easier for you?
I would say none of it really.
That's why my next question was going to be what's gotten harder, if that's the case. So if that's an easier one to answer, what about pop-up dining and producing them has gotten harder?
I think what's gotten harder is the fact that I think it's gaining popularity. And now it's not so much as a novelty to people that they want to go out and do a pop-up dinner. And I think that's what's making it harder is to, like, sell it to people at this point. And now Kamayan, the way I do my dinners, has gotten also very popular. So now people are like, oh, but you're not the only one doing Kamayan. I can do Kamayan at this restaurant.
Right.
You know, whatever. They offer it every Wednesday, Thursday, whatever it is. And I'm just like, yes, but it's a different experience when you're enclosed with a bunch of strangers that you're going to share a meal with. And I'm not selling it as a Kamayan experience. I'm not selling the dinner as just a normal Filipino fare. Like, no, this is regional Filipino. Like, stuff that you probably won't be able to order at this restaurant, you know? And mind you, I'm not going to serve lumpia. I'm not going to serve adobo. I'm not going to serve piniritong isda. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to give you something that you're probably going to question me whether it's actually Filipino or not. Yeah. Like, I've had a diner in Cleveland. You know, I made beef kulma. So beef kulma is actually from, I got the recipe from my friend in Davao. And it's very similar to the Indian beef korma.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's called kulma because obviously translation, whatever it was that happened in between. Mm-hmm. And then, but it's very reminiscent of korma. It has turmeric. It has coconut milk. It has peanut butter. It has tomatoes. It has all kinds of spices, you know, that would be most likely Indian to some people. So when I served this dish at the end of the dinner, this guy was super Filipino. Like, he had like a Filipino sweatshirt, like a Filipino cap, you know?
Oh, yeah.
You know, that kind of dude.
You got the three stars in the sun tattoo, repping Manny Pack. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, we all know that dude.
Yep.
You know, and I'm just like, and he comes up to me and he's like, you know, super repping Filipino shit hard and was like, hey, chef, you know, I just wanted to ask you something. And I'm like, okay, what is it? And he was like, you know, that last dish that you served us. He's like, I'm just wondering, why did you serve us an Indian sauce? I was like, incorrect. I was like, let me school you on that, okay?
Oh man, I know, like, you're totally right about knowing that one dude that like just reps hard but at the very surface level. I think there was a dinner that we did where we didn't do halo halo the usual way, and I remember one of the titas who came over. There's like, we have a term, like the titos and titas that come. I remember they were like, but that's not diabetic enough. I'm like, whoa. I didn't know there was like a diabetes scale for something to be considered Filipino. But since we keep returning to the issue of Pinoy food, we should dive into that, right?
I think so.
God help us. And for those who listen, forgive us if we commit any blunders in history. But, you know, in 2012, there was this big, you know, everyone was sharing it on. I remember everyone was sharing it on Facebook when Andrew Zimmern was like, Filipino food is going to be the next big thing. Right. And in a way it has. Right. In a way it has. I just saw Nicole Ponseca, the owner of Maharlika, you know, talk about how lumpia is the new egg roll and pancit is the new pad thai, and that's really cool. But how else do you think the perception around Pinoy food has changed since 2012?
I think now a lot more people are not so timid about sharing our food. I think that's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think with people like Amy Bessa, you know, from Purple Yam,
right,
who've been doing it for so, so long, you know. And then, obviously, Jeepney and Maharlika, who've been, like, you know, the forerunners, literally, of, like, modern Filipino.
Mm-hmm.
And basically creating dishes or at, not creating dishes, choosing dishes that they think would be a perfect gateway in order for other people to explore the cuisine mm-hmm. is awesome. And with their efforts now, like other people, like I've been all over the United States and I've been meeting so many people who are just starting either their own pop-ups, their own food trucks, you know, or like thinking of doing one. And it's amazing. Like before, like it would be so hard pressed to find Filipino food anywhere, mm-hmm. you know, and even then it would be inside the seafood city. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's in the Asian section.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Or like they just have a little food court and then you just do the whole turuturo thing. But now, like, I'm so glad that it has progressed into this beautiful movement where right. people are like, I'm going to share with you my Filipino dishes, you know, and your Filipino dishes could be different from mine. And that's okay because we come from different regions mm-hmm. and, you know, and I think that's the beauty of it is that I always say there's no right or wrong Filipino, you know?
Yeah. Like what exactly constitutes as Filipino
at this point. But at the same time, like your adobo is so common in all across the regions, in all the islands. But the way I make my adobo is going to be different from how someone in Mindanao or like Luzon makes their adobo.
Yeah.
Like it's just going to be different and it's still adobo.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I think like even my mom, when we were growing up, she would ask like, what version do you want? Cause she knew the Chinese Pinoy version, which used the oyster sauce and spring onions. Yeah. Then she knew like the Antiqueño version, which had tomatoes. And then she knew like obviously the one that we're all used to, which is just like soy sauce and vinegar. And I love the way, you know, Tita Amy from Purple Yam said how when she put coconut milk and huge backlash against it, she like, and you know her, she knows her history. So she's like, let me school y'all a little bit.
Exactly. It's called adobo sa gata.
Yeah. So I know you have like 10 minutes left. So I want to make sure I get like the good stuff. Let me see. Oh, so I was reading an article, I think when Pepper PH interviewed you, where you said something like, you know, I think one thing that, and tell me if I'm misquoting you, one thing that could make us successful is if we concentrate around a specific set of dishes or maybe even just one dish, like how the Japanese concentrated on ramen or sushi or, you know, like, to basically focus our branding efforts around. And at the time, I know that you had said, like, you didn't know what that dish was going to be or should be. Do you have an answer to that now where if you were to pick a couple of dishes that you were like, you know, let's focus our efforts on this so people really rally behind, at least as a gateway, this is Pinoy food to the masses, what would it be?
I think one very good dish that I could, like, say would be easy to brand and all of that stuff is anything that is porky. So but my money is on sisig. My money is on sisig. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I love, and I keep telling everyone that I love the fact that we use everything in the animal.
Right.
Like snout to tail in our cuisine. It's just always been that way. And I love that, you know, people are all about like, oh, I don't really want to eat meat, blah, 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 because you're killing an animal. But I'm like, no, but if you're respecting your food and knowing that these energies are being recycled in you and you are also emanating these energies whatsoever. But I love the fact that sisig is using the pig's head. Mm-hmm. And most of the time, most people don't know what to do with a pig's head. They just throw it away.
Right.
And some butchers probably will make head cheese or something like that. But most of the time, it just goes to waste. And I love the fact that it's so simple. The flavors are so distinct. Like, you can never mistake seasoning for anything else.
Yeah,
because
yeah, yeah.
of the soy, because of the calamansi. So there's that tanginess. And then you've got the chicken livers that make it so creamy. Yeah. You know, then you add the egg component on top of that. And then you've got the heat, which is the Thai chilies, you know, and the crunchiness and all these like flavors and textures that come together is so distinctly Filipino.
Yeah.
I feel, you know, and I think I would want to get behind, let's say, a sisig restaurant or something. You know what I mean? Like
artisanal sisig. It's the next thing.
I mean, we grow our own pigs in the backyard. You know what I mean? Yeah,
wow. We harvest our own coconut sugar. I just bought a pack of that. Man, it is really good. Coconut sugar, by the way. A couple of questions for, you know, people, I guess like myself who were not, or I guess like you too, who were not professionally trained in cooking. And are looking to maybe not even do pop-up dinners, but just to learn how to cook for themselves, right? What would you say is the first step in becoming a self-sufficient cook? You know, you talked a little bit about survival a while ago. If you said, you know, if you learn these 1 to 3 skills, you're going to be okay. What would those be?
To be a sufficient cook.
By that, I mean, it could be anything from like learn knife skills, or is it learning how to construct a proper grocery list? Like, what are the skills that you think the average Juan or Juanita, I don't want to say Joe. I was like, man, we're in the Philippines. How would they, you know, what are the skills that people would need to know so that they don't have to order from Seamless all the time?
I think understanding heat is one of them. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's on the stove or in the oven, I think understanding how to control that heat and learning how to cook with that heat is very essential. And then number two, I think, would be knowing your ingredients, you know, because I feel like if you're afraid to go out there and taste stuff, then, you know, like, how is that going to help you cook or discover something that you can cook with if you're not, you know, if you're not going to take that step? Yeah, and I think the last thing is the third skill to know or to have is definitely some knife skills. Like more than knife skills, I think, is like butchering skills. Mm-hmm. You know, I love learning how to properly debone a chicken, you know, fillet fish. Instead of just buying a fillet of fish, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. So that they don't have to see the head, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah. And for me, I can do so much with that fish. After I fillet it, I'll use the bones for stock. I could use the head for sinigang. You know, all these things.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
There's so many things you could do with it that I feel is just being wasted just because people are so used to convenience. Mm-hmm.
Or a sanitized, safe-looking version of the food.
Food,
So I want to spend the last 5 minutes on one-off questions. Just answer them super quickly. Or not, if you choose
or to. Not.
Or if you want to expand on them. But they're meant to be short. So, first one. Person who most influenced you from a culinary standpoint. So someone who cooks very well that's influenced you the most.
Like from my life or?
Yeah. Or it could be someone you saw on TV. Just someone, you know, some people are like, oh, Julia Child. That's my
culinary hero.
Culinary spirit animal.
Well, I can't really say it's Francis Wallman because I just discovered him. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's no. But I would say, as cliche as it is, like, I think Julia Child, because I just love her determination.
Okay.
I think that's what it was. Like, you know, the whole scandal of like an American woman, you know, cooking French cuisine. What the hell? You know what I mean?
A Filipino girl with a shaved head who used to be pre-med traveling to South America cooking.
Yeah. Like, defying all odds, that sort of deal. Okay. And I like that.
Best kitchen tool you've purchased ever?
Well, knives are a given. Yep. I think
it's actually put besides the knife, but considering your answer a while ago about I just need a pot and a fire, I was like, I'm not gonna say a knife.
I think it's my sous vide, my Nomiku.
Oh yeah.
Because it has saved me like so many times.
Yeah.
In terms of like, you know, what if there's no, you know, source of heat anywhere except for an induction burner.
Yeah.
Okay, what do we do now? You know? And I'm glad that I have it with me.
Months from now, we're going to find you in the Amazon jungle going, like, man, I only have this river, but I got a sous vide. I got a sous vide, though. Three spices to describe you.
Three spices. I would definitely say cayenne. That's one.
Okay.
Another one is sugar. And another one would be... that's hard. I'm trying to think of another spice. Ginger.
Ah, ginger. That was a surprising one. Two last ones. One book, documentary, or some sort of resource that you think every person should read or watch or listen to become a better cook.
Become a better cook. I definitely enjoyed Chef's Table.
Oh yeah.
Mainly because they're not only showcasing the food in itself, but they're profiling these people as people, you know, and basically saying that, hey, they came from these roots, these are their backgrounds, and there's that just one thing that inspired them to do what they do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I love that. And I think after watching Chef's Table, I was like definitely more inspired than ever to keep doing what I'm doing.
Yeah, it's almost as if it's not as much about cooking being separate from us than it is like about how to live a good life doing what you want to do, right?
Yes, exactly.
Last one. So imagine you wrote a book or produced a movie, you know, about what it is that you do. What would be the one line message behind it? Like if it was like one line that you were like, this is my message to the world, what would that one line be?
Oh God. one liner. Damn, that's really hard. one thing that that just came to my mind was like, you know, 500 Days of Summer.
Yeah, yeah.
You know that he works for this card company, and then during that time he was very depressed about Summer leaving him or breaking up with him, and then he saw a cat that was like trying to catch a butterfly, but he was on a ledge, and the little caption on the card said, "Go for it," you know.
Yeah.
And then he was like, well, that's stupid. If you're on a ledge and you're trying to catch a butterfly and you're going for it, you're just falling to your death. Yeah. You know what I mean? That's what he said. But somehow it's pretty much what, you know, what it would be anyway. Like for me, I think it would be to trust the unknown, you know, and just going for it.
The cat could have not jumped and lived the rest of its life wondering what would have happened, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So, absolute last question. You're headed off to South America. How can people, I don't know, follow the story or how do people know what you're up to? Where do you want people to I guess, find look me. Up? Yeah, find you.
Well, they can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, and it's at Salo Series, so SaloSeries, or they can just contact me directly. I like emails. I don't get enough.
Really? That's surprising.
Yeah.
That's surprising. I would have thought someone of your stature would be inundated by emails. Nope. Cool. So it's at Salo Series.
Yes.
Cool. Yana, this like time flew by. It's already been 45 minutes. So thank you so much for being the first one. I think we definitely, one, we need to cook together again soon. And two, we should definitely do a part two at some point, many months from now. I feel like you have much more to tell than just the cooking aspect, especially given your unique background and even, you know, just your travels and I think your take on how to live a good life is really something very unique. So, thank you so much. I
Thanks,
will leave
pal.
you to it and good luck on the tour.
Thank you. I appreciate it, and I hope to cook with you again soon.
Okay, see ya.
See ya.
Hey guys, Paolo here again. Just wanted to thank you so much for listening to this first episode. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we did in getting to talk to Yana. If you'd like to learn more, check us out at hiddenapron.com. Of course, you could always send questions, feedback. Maybe you'd actually end up being on one of our episodes at hiddenapron@gmail.com. And if you want to see some food porn announcements of upcoming dinners, check us out on Instagram, hidden_apron. Simple enough. Catch you in the next episode.